You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Since Roe v. Wade was overturned last year, Washington and Idaho have been pursuing vastly different goals on abortion access. Idaho had a trigger ban that made abortions illegal after the Supreme Court's ruling. Meanwhile, Washington has not only been protecting abortion access, lawmakers have been working on legislation that shields abortion providers from extradition or losing their medical license. And between Boise and Olympia sit communities that are dealing with the repercussions of the new legal landscape. Places like Spokane and Coeur d'Alene, Moscow, Idaho, and Pullman, Washington. Places that are closely intertwined.
It's about 6 miles of highway that separate Pullman and Moscow, but it's just really a short skip across there. We've got a ton of people that go back and forth every day for work.
That's Sam Wolfile, a reporter at the Inlander in Spokane. Sam says state lines didn't used to mean much for daily living in these places. Sam grew up in Pullman and used to go back to school shopping across the border in Moscow. Now, though, increasingly more people have been traveling from Idaho into Washington seeking abortions. Sam reports on abortion access and the effect of legislation along the Washington-Idaho border for the Inlander, and she says that Washington and Idaho shared abortion providers even before Roe was overturned.
There's a Planned Parenthood clinic in Pullman, for example, that was already used to seeing folks coming over from Moscow if they needed a provider in the Spokane Valley, Spokane area. They were already seeing patients from North Idaho because there weren't a lot of options before Roe was overturned. But they were preparing for this influx. And I know that before Roe was officially overturned, when we sort of got that draft ruling release.
Yeah, the Alito decision. Yeah.
Yeah, they started seeing a ton of people calling and assuming that it was already illegal in Idaho. So they started seeing an increase in patients before the new Idaho laws even took effect. And now we're seeing, I think I got from Planned Parenthood, more than 53% of the abortion patients in Pullman in 2022 came over from Idaho. Interestingly, in Walla Walla, which is a little closer for some of the southern Idaho folks, they went from having 0% of their abortion patients in 2021 come from Idaho to 50% in 2022.
Wow. Yeah. Big, big change there. What do abortion laws look like in Idaho right now?
Right now, there's a couple laws on the books, but the one that really matters is the one that completely banned it. So they had a ban in place to criminalize abortion if and when Roe was overturned. So as soon as that happened, it was something like 30 days after that, the state was going to put this law in place that makes it a crime to provide abortion at any stage of pregnancy. So that's where we're at right now. There's no exceptions to that law. There's just affirmative defenses for providers. So they would still potentially be facing court and going to jail potentially if they're arrested and hiring a lawyer just to be able to offer, hey, for one of these affirmative defenses, I was able to provide this service.
Can you explain a little bit more what that means? So does that mean that the burden is on the provider to prove that services they rendered to patients in Idaho were legal under the law? Does that, am I on the right lines there?
It's one of these legalese things that gets complicated for most of us. In some states with abortion bans, they have exceptions where, say, for rape or incest, they're going to say, you know what, we're going to say that's fine, go ahead and offer that in those instances. But in Idaho's wording, they offer an affirmative defense. So it's still technically something that someone could be arrested for. And then in court, they'd be able to bring forward a defense to get the charges dropped if it were in the case of rape that was reported to police or incest that was reported to police or to save the life of the woman. But again, this is very different than just having an exception where they aren't worrying about potentially being arrested or facing this legal court process.
So even if you're providing a service that is an exception under the law for somebody who was raped or somebody that was the victim of incest, as a doctor or a nurse practitioner, whoever's providing this assistance, they should be bracing to be arrested and to have to field a legal defense, hire a lawyer, things like that.
Right. And be looking at, if they are found guilty, a felony where they could be serving 2 to 5 years in prison.
In August, the U.S. Department of Justice filed a lawsuit against Idaho over the state's abortion ban. What's in that lawsuit? What are the allegations?
So that lawsuit is interesting. It takes a real focus on what I was just talking about. So providing these affirmative defenses, there's specifically only one for if a doctor steps in to save the life of the mother, but it doesn't say anything about the health of the mother. So apparently there's a federal law for any hospital that takes federal health care, like Medicare, Medicaid. They're required to provide necessary stabilizing treatment in their emergency rooms. And pregnancy can result in a lot of different complications that can cause health problems where in the past, a physician might have stepped in and pretty quickly decided we need to terminate this pregnancy to prevent really serious health issues. But because it's worded as for the life of the patient, now they're kind of wondering, well, how close to death does this person have to be for that physician to feel comfortable providing that care?
Yeah. It doesn't seem to be an ideal position for a doctor to be in, to have to make a call. Is this person definitely going to die here? Or is this just going to gravely affect their health? That seems like an impossible call. And I can imagine that a lot of providers are struggling with that right now.
Right. In talking to some of these doctors who've worked with patients, many of them for decades, I mean, they're mentioning examples to me like, you know, I have a patient who had a pulmonary embolism during their previous pregnancy and had heart failure. And so we know now that they're pregnant again, that they're at risk of stroke or heart attack and pretty seriously at risk of that. But they're asking, you know, do we know for sure that that's going to happen? I don't know if I can say yes or no on that.
And can I prove that in a court of law? Because that's ultimately what I would have to do as a doctor.
Right. Mm.
There have been additional abortion restrictions proposed in Idaho. They are still in the legislative phase. What has been happening in the state legislature regarding abortion care?
There's a couple of things. There is one new bill going through that I'm not as familiar with, but I learned that there is an attempt to add more restrictions on essentially helping a minor go across state lines to get an abortion without their parents' permission. It looks like the wording is going to be very similar, where you would have an affirmative defense if you got permission from their parents to help them out and getting them to a doctor that can provide this care. But they're proposing adding this to their human trafficking ordinance. And similarly, it would be saying if you help a minor without their parents' consent to travel to get an abortion in a place where that's legal, you could be facing 2 to 5 years in prison.
The Washington legislature has been quite vocal, our governor as well, about protecting abortion access. What types of protections are lawmakers in Olympia looking at right now?
There's a couple bills to keep an eye on. There's a Senate Bill 5489 is a shield law that would essentially protect providers in Washington from worrying that if they give care to a patient from out of state and that state has one of these bans on the books, they would be more protected from attempts to arrest them and extradite them to other states or to have their employers provide information about the care that they provided legally in Washington. There's another bill, House Bill 1340. I think that one is up for second reading, actually. So it looks like it'll go to a vote potentially here soon. And in that case, if you're disciplined, say you're a doctor and you've got a medical license in another state where abortion is now illegal, and for some reason that state decides to discipline you through their medical board for providing abortion in that state previously or because I don't think any of these doctors would be providing them now that they're illegal.
Yeah.
But essentially, if you have disciplinary action taken for legal abortion in another state, then you would not be disciplined in Washington, which is typically what happens with any other kind of discipline. So let's say you get dinged in another state because you had unsafe practices, you're likely to get dinged in Washington on your license as well and have to go through certain steps to be able to maintain your license here and keep it.
Got it. So the misconduct wouldn't roll over to Washington if it related to abortion services.
Right. And again, so long as that was provided legally in the context that it was given.
Sam, in your reporting, you found that providers in Washington are still very much confused about what is legally risky, and some are going to extraordinary lengths to stay safe. How are providers trying to protect themselves from prosecution?
You know, it was interesting. I spoke with a doctor who works in the Seattle area, I believe, and he holds licenses in some southern states where abortion is now illegal. And while working in those states in previous years, of course, made friends and knows people there. And now he's saying that he doesn't want to even go there to visit because he's not sure if he's subject to arrest when he steps foot into those states, even though the care that he provided in the past was legal at the time.
You know, Sam, there's confusion for providers of both abortion and general medical care in Washington and Idaho, as you've shown in your reporting. Do you see any clarity coming to providers in the near future from either the legislature, from, you know, the Justice Department's lawsuit, anything coming down the line that could help this situation?
I don't know. Unfortunately, when bills are written about topics like healthcare without a lot of input from healthcare providers and the people who've trained for years to do that, it tends to lead to these situations where we don't get a lot of clarity until things go to court.
Yeah, there's going to be problems.
Yeah, it's like until some of these concerns that these doctors are mentioning actually get taken up by a prosecutor and we see case law start getting formed where you'll see a judge weigh in on this and decide what the law can and can't do. I don't know that there is going to be a lot of clarity for folks.
Sam Wolfile is a staff reporter at The Inlander. Thank you very much for joining me to talk us through this, and thanks for your reporting.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
As Sam mentioned, it's a confusing time for healthcare providers working in obstetrics in states that are passing abortion restrictions. Some are moving to states like Washington, where they can legally terminate pregnancies. Others are staying put, trying to help their patients access care in other states when they need or want an abortion. KUOW's Eilish O'Neill looks at Washington's increasing role as a destination for doctors and for their patients.
Growing up in Corpus Christi, Texas, Sarah Villarreal says she saw a lot of teenagers and very young women getting pregnant.
I was actually the first in my family to graduate high school without a child.
Villarreal says that's what motivated her to become an OBGYN, giving people access to the contraception and the options that she didn't even know about as a teenager. But then Texas started restricting access to abortions.
I wasn't really feeling like I could safely practice, and I felt like I was losing a lot of the joy that I had in my job previously.
This one time, a patient came into the ER. She was pregnant, and she had a uterine infection, which can be fatal.
If left untreated, it could get to that. That's the whole thing with these laws, right? Is like, how long am I supposed to wait? Am I waiting until she's needing a blood transfusion and septic to the point where she could have a seizure?
Villarreal knew that the patient needed an abortion, but she hesitated.
Anyone can report you. And so it really is a scary situation where you're like, it's this whole thing of what we call CYA, cover your ass, right? Like, no one wants to practice medicine like that.
Villarreal says while she was trying to figure out what to do, the patient miscarried. But she didn't feel safe in Texas anymore. And it wasn't just abortion. The state was threatening to restrict gender-affirming care as well. She decided to move to Seattle.
I was heartbroken. I think the thing that really affected me the most was I was doing a lot of transgender care. And I realized that I left a lot of patients without a willing provider. And that was really, really hard. I really felt like I was abandoning my patients.
It's not just Texas and Washington. 12 states have banned abortion entirely, and others have severely restricted them. It's too early to have any data about how many providers are moving to a new state because of the Supreme Court's Dobbs ruling. But the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists says, anecdotally, it is happening. Others are staying where they are, some because they support the new laws, others because they want to fight those laws and to refer patients out of state for abortions. That's what Dr. Caitlin Gustafson has decided to do.
This is my home. These are my patients.
We talked over Zoom from her home in a small town in Idaho where she practices family medicine with obstetrics. Before the Supreme Court's ruling, Gustafson provided abortions at a Planned Parenthood and also offered abortions in her day-to-day practice. She says when people come to her wanting to terminate a pregnancy,
these are generally people that I do know really well. The majority of abortion patients, you know, are already parents. And there's a good chance that I've already delivered, you know, their previous children or take care of their children.
Gustafson says now, instead of providing abortions herself, she sees her primary role as giving patients information.
What their options are, where they can go, have frank conversations about their particular situation. It's more important than ever to be that advocate that patients know is going to stand up for them and the healthcare that they need.
Some of her patients have traveled to Washington for abortions. Back in Seattle, OBGYN Sarah Villarreal has settled into a townhouse in the Rainier Valley. She says at her job here, she feels like she can give her patients more options than she could back in Texas.
I definitely don't feel that fear. And just you feel like you're doing the right thing for your patients.
Even so, she's not sure she wants to stay.
I was doing a lot of good where I was, and I feel like here in Seattle, providers like me are a dime a dozen. My patients don't need me the way that they needed me in Texas.
So Villarreal says she's not sure when, but she might go back. Texas will always be home for her. Ailish O'Neill, KUOW News.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime right here online at KUOW.org, or of course on your favorite podcast app.